Okay, we're with Mike Grenier tonight, and Mike, this was like a throwback, I don't know what, to the 70s and the 80s.
Yes.
What a tremendous game tonight.
Right. It's funny you should say that, because, Rick, having gone since like 1973 to every like big game seven they've had, it was definitely a reminder of all those other games, various series, the Milwaukee Bucks in the 1970s and the Philadelphia 76ers in the 80s, and of course, even going back to the Knicks and all that in the early 70s, and of course, you know, the Lakers in the 80s and up until the recent years. So, yeah, the Garden was really wild today in a good way. The crowd was really having a seventh game at the Garden today, and I said this earlier in the series, the Bucks might rue the day that they tanked the final game of the regular season, because that meant they finished behind the Celtics in the standings, and it meant that the Celtics would have a Game 7 at the Garden, and today it paid off.
Well, there's so much to get to that, but the first thing I want to talk about is when you texted me tonight, you talked about the electricity in the Garden, and I think that speaks so well to the times and to the sports culture in this area, the fact that you've got a whole new generation of players since the last Boston championship, but they
right.
still get it. And that was part of the reason, I think, that the Celtics were cheered on to victory.
Right, right. Yeah, there's certainly a link, I think. I mean, I often see comments in the media, like from fans who remember those early 1980s, remember those late 70s, remember the 2008 championship, which is like now 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a link that people have to the old players, and even the more recent old players, like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, who was there today, by the way. Paul Pierce got an enormous ovation when they showed him on the big screen at the Garden. Mac Jones of the Patriots, the quarterback, was also there, and he got an enormous cheer. And Robert Kraft was also there, the owner of the Patriots. And it just showed the links that even between the Boston area teams is phenomenal. And I think I think people thrive on that, seeing the championship-level organizations and how they support each other, you know? And as far as the game today, Rick, there are so many things to talk about. So dive right in. I'm ready for you.
Well, we're going to talk tonight, and we're also going to talk tomorrow night on a sports
Absolutely.
Show. But I think
Absolutely.
I think the first thing is, after watching the Bruins come so close and miss again on Game 7,
yes,
the first quarter tonight made me very nervous with the Celtics.
Oh, yeah. I agree, Rick. And I had said to Phil Stacey, who was pinch hitting today for the great Nick Giannino, who does a phenomenal job covering the Celtics for the Salem News. And Nick was sidelined by illness, and so Phil Stacey, who was the hockey guy, covered the game, and he and I were just discussing analyzing every play or every quarter. And you're right, first quarter they were very unsettled on offense. They were tentative, and they weren't organized, and so it did not look good. However, they weren't trailing by 11 or 12 or 10. It was like a six-point game. And I'm thinking, okay, they're hanging in there even though they haven't found their rhythm yet. And sure enough, in the second quarter, they played them even and actually took the lead late in the half. And if I can point this out, Rick, and I don't know, I don't want to dissect it too much if we're going to talk also tomorrow night, but mm-hmm. to me the single most important play of the game occurred in the final second of the first half. The Celts are up by 45-43. Giannis was like maybe in a position to take a three-pointer for the Bucks to take a lead. Instead, Marcus Smart came over from the blind side, knocked the ball away, got fouled by Giannis, and with 9/10 of a second left, what Marcus Smart, a brilliant
yes,
play,
yes.
made sort of like he was taking a shot from half court.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Bucks sidelines were going crazy thinking he wasn't shooting the ball from half court. And the Celtics rightfully pointed out, and the officials caught it and said, 9/10 of a second, he wasn't going to be taking a dribble towards the basket.
Right.
Therefore, not only did he make the steal and prevent the Bucks from possibly taking a lead, but he got fouled in the, quote, act of shooting. He went to the line, made all three shots with 9/10 of a second left, and that made it a 48-43 game, Celtics in favor at the half. And then in the first 2 minutes of the second half, the Celtics outscored them 14-4 and took a 12-point lead. And I don't want to say game over, but the Bucks never got it to single digits the rest of the way.
That's a great point, Mike, because when I saw that, I remember the game, I forget what game it was a couple of games ago, that they lost when Marcus Smart claimed he was going up for the three-pointer, and they only gave him 2 points, and the Celtics lost that in the final seconds. And maybe on Monday night we can discuss further how they got here, because we're not even talking about Game 6, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. But the other thing we have to talk about is the complementary play of so many different Celtics, including Grant Williams.
Yeah, Grant Williams, of course, had the game, the game of his life, really. I mean, he had a game earlier in this series. We had 21 points. He played huge. But I was concerned about him going into today because the last two games, he's played tough defense, but he's been absent on offense, like AWOL. In other words, he had like 0 points in Game 5, and I believe he ended up with just 2 or 3 points in Game 6, and they were free throws. Game 6, obviously, they won on the road, huge win, but he was not a factor on offense. Today, he comes out, and sort of like Marcus Smart, he's fearless, whether he's going well or not going well on offense. He's fearless. He'll take the shots. And the Bucks defense was designed today to try to take Tatum away, going inside to the basket, try to take Jaylen Brown away, going to the basket. That left Grant Williams wide open. And, you know, he went like 7 for 18. You think 18 shots Grant Williams should. However, he was hitting them. And he hit some big shots in the context of the game when they were taking the lead. And therefore, he absolutely had to have the best game of his young career and still played the hard defense. He plays with so much heart, very similar to Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other guy, and I know you're talking about complimentary players, we have to talk about Peyton Pritchard,
mm-hmm.
who stands all of 6 feet. He went 5 for 7 from the floor. He had 4 3-pointers. And I tell you, he made a huge play on an offensive rebound after Smart missed a wide-open three with an air ball. He snuck in, Pritchard did, for an offensive rebound, shoveled it right back out to the sideline to Marcus Smart, who then had a second attempt and drained the three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they were in the flow and leading by 12 or 15, and they pushed the lead to 18. And naturally, the crowd went berserk, because when you have a six-footer getting an offensive rebound and it turns into a three-pointer for his teammate, the crowd's got hurt. So that lifted the Celtics once again.
The Celtics kept pedal to the metal. They unlike I think it was Game 5 when they let up in that fourth quarter.
Yeah,
and they maintained the pace. They kept going. They kept pushing. And one of the things I saw in the pregame show on ABC were the analysts saying that Giannis is probably the best in the universe, but he needs help from his supporting cast.
Right.
Now, he didn't get it in a sense tonight, and how much of that depended on Celtics defense, because I couldn't tell from here whether the Bucks were having a bad game, in complimenting Giannis, or the Celtics were putting good D on.
Well, it was all of those things, right? In other words, like the complimentary players, and of course, I love Pat Connaughton. He's a local kid, and he was shooting 59% from the floor for the series, but today he shot 1 for 6, okay? And then Grayson Allen, who's a similar player, in other words, the guy who could shoot it from outside, was 0 for 6. Therefore, those two guys were 1 for 12. Drew Holiday, who's a phenomenal player, really a heady player, was like 9 for 21 overall. And Giannis, very important factor. To me, today, at the half, he had 17 points and 12 rebounds. He went 4 for 16 from the floor the rest of the way. And I think that was partially due to great defense by Horford, who I think played his most focused defense that I've ever seen him play in a Celtics uniform.
Wow, okay.
He wasn't caring today about whether he'd go 10 points, 6 points, or 16. His focus was to not let Giannis go berserk.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis shot 4 for 16 in the second half. Moreover, he played 43 minutes, and I think he was just dragging at the end. Giannis had nothing left to give, because in this 7-game series, Rick, he averaged 40 minutes per game.
Well, it's interesting you say that.
It just took a toll on him.
Because on the other side of things, I think it was Tatum had 4 fouls or something, or they had to hit him down. And it didn't take away from the Celtics' flow of the game at all.
Well, Rick, I just remember this off the top of my head. Yeah, he committed his fourth foul with 7:44 left in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics went on to outscore the Bucks 16-11 in those final 7:44 of the third quarter. Therefore, they built on a 10-point lead, made it a 15-point lead. Therefore, they were in a good position to win that game going into the fourth quarter when Tatum had fresh legs. So that was again, a critical stretch in the game. They played nearly 8 minutes without him in the third, and the other guys carried the load. That was, it was just good team play, getting the ball to different people. You know, Jaylen Brown stepped up, Marcus Smart stepped up, Horford had a couple of buckets, Pritchard stepped up with a couple of huge threes, Grant Williams kept hitting. So there were other guys that stepped in when Tatum, you know, could not play. And you know, Tatum, of course, was coming off that insane 46-point game on Friday night. He still finished with 23. And so, you know, he had 69 points in the final two games of the series.
Jaylen Brown didn't set the world on fire, but he made some really big plays tonight.
He really did. He's a shake-and-bake player, Rick, and he has such great athletic skill that he can make off-balance shots, similar to Tatum. Tatum could do the same thing. And the only thing that worries me about Jaylen Brown, two things. One, he's still not a great free-throw shooter, so sometimes he'll go to the foul line for two, and I say, if he makes one, I'll be happy. And that's what happened two or three times today. The other thing is, when he's handling the ball and going through his legs and trying to create some room for himself, he commits some turnovers. Sometimes they look like deadly turnovers, you know. But you have to live with that, because the good part of Jaylen Brown is he will complete the play and make a great-looking basket on an acrobatic move. So you have to live with some turnovers. You have to live with his less-than-stellar foul shooting, because he can do so many other things. And he also works his tail off on defense.
Well, I was going to ask about that, but I'll get to that in a second. I got a little nervous in the fourth quarter once again. It looked like JB and JT each started to do the ISO thing. But as soon as I was getting nervous about the ISO thing, man, they passed it, gave it away, and they got an assist on a bucket. So it seemed like they were going to fall into bad habits, which I think they did in Game 5, but they didn't succumb to that.
Right, and I also think part of that, too, that it helped the Celtics, was that the Bucks consistently were missing shots when they could have gotten back in the game in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, their offense wasn't flowing either. They were taking some, even Giannis. That's when Giannis, I thought, was wearing down. And he missed, Rick, and you saw the game, he missed some shots at the rim that he could normally dunk, or he missed two or three really easy baskets. And I'm saying to myself, he is exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And he had nothing left to give today. He finished with you know, the 26 points, 10 for 26 from the floor. That's not Giannis, 10 for 26 from the floor. He had 20 rebounds, but 4 for 16 in the second half. That told me that he was spent, physically spent, because the Celtics attacked him defensively with Horford, with Grant Williams, with Marcus Smart, and with Jaylen Brown on a couple of switches. And I think Giannis, after a while, just said, this is crazy here. I can't get to my spots because the Celtics are throwing various kinds of defense. I give Udoka a lot of credit for switching things up on Giannis and keeping the Bucks from going berserk.
Sometimes, like in football, I'll watch a certain player, and when I'm calling a game, I have to watch the offense. And in basketball, I sort of do the same thing as a hometown, you know, a home fan sitting in the living room. Tell me a little bit more about the defense, if you would, Mike, from your point of view. And in particular, I want to know about Jaylen Brown, because we've seen Jason Tatum switch and go on the big guys. We've seen Horford do that. We've certainly seen Grant Williams muscle around. What about JB on defense?
JB on defense, he couldn't handle Giannis. Is just too strong for him, and I saw it many times during the series when JB got switched onto Giannis. Giannis could easily take him into the hole and score. As much as athletic as Jaylen is, he's not as quite as physically strong as Grant Williams or Jason Tatum. Therefore, he could not handle Giannis. But that was the only guy he could not handle. He could handle everybody else because he's so quick, and he can recover from any tiny mistake, and he's able to, let's say, get his hand on a shot or force an opponent into a bad shot. And I think, so he's kind of an underrated defensive player because he doesn't make the spectacular plays, but he's very solid. He doesn't get, like, the backdoor plays against him. He's a very alert defensive player. And I just think he's an extremely solid defender, not a phenomenal, but very solid within the context of what the coaching staff wants them to play. He's a great team defensive player is what I'm saying.
Watching the game on television, you know, without Robert Williams, although he was in uniform, I didn't notice Daniel Theis. So was he missing in action? What was your view of him?
Well, Theis, I mean, of course, had a couple of good games in the series, but today was not one. I mean, he played limited minutes. He had a couple of rebounds. He drew an offensive foul.
Well, let me ask a better question. Who?
Yes.
What was replacing Tice and Williams tonight? What was the deal?
I think Grant Williams played like a giant. In other words, like not only was this primary assignment enough to handle, meaning try to guard Giannis, who is 40 pounds heavier and 4 to 5 or 6 inches taller, but he took it upon himself that when they had the wide open three, he was going to like become a factor. In other words, he was going to live or die with his success on the 3-point line, knowing that the Bucks were throwing that sort of defense against the Celtics, particularly against Tatum and Brown. Grant Williams had to make the three, or the Celtics were going to lose this game.
Mm.
And he kept his cool. He's had a good stroke all year. Okay, he shot over 40% on threes throughout the season. A major improvement, and today that shot came back to him today after deserting him for games 5 and 6. It was just, you know, like Doc Rivers has often said, it's a make or miss league. Okay, and today he made him.
All right, the other guy is Derek White. He missed a bunch, but then he made a couple. So his contribution.
His contribution was negligible. So, in other words, that's why I'm saying emphatically, that's why Grant Williams and Peyton Pritchard turned out to be such huge factors. Derek White shot 1 for 10, took some ill-advised shots, and then he also got in trouble when he took it into the paint, and you had a 7-foot Brook Lopez there, and you had a 7-foot Giannis in there. He didn't know what to do with the ball. He could have been called for a couple 3-second violations. He was, I hate to use the word clueless, but he kind of got lost in the paint when he ordinarily might have, you know, tried to take a layup and draw a foul. But he went in against the two trees, Lopez and Giannis. You can't do that. And, of course, his outside shooting, which has been shaky all along, wasn't there today at all. 1 for 10. He hit, I believe, shot number 9. He was 0 for 8, and he hit a 3 towards the end of the shot clock that, you know, when the Celtics were well ahead. And then he took another shot later and missed it. So 1 for 10. So in this next series against the Miami Heat, and this, that could be a fantastic series as well, Derek White has to, I guess, play a smarter role than he played in this game today, and he's capable of it. But today, he just was not playing a smart game, and just physically, he missed a lot of shots.
All right, I want to save the preview for Monday night, but
sure.
I think finally, Mike, obviously a great atmosphere at the Garden. Where were you at the game?
I was in the regular media section, which is like up on the what they call the rafters level,
the ninth floor, where
the Bruins media is
the
now.
The ninth floor, yeah.
And that's where we were, and Phil Stacey pinch hitting. So he's constantly asking me questions because Phil is so used to doing hockey. But he did a great job today. So I'm like, we're going crazy up there. And Phil was just carrying on and saying, Mike, let's look this up. And I was telling him, let's look this up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that he was having a blast up there covering a Game 7, and of course, I'm hoping Nick Giannino gets back for Game 1 of the Miami series, which I believe the first Boston game will be next Saturday.
Well, I think you know, with two Games 7 for our Boston winter teams, you know, and the Bruins coming up just short, this, as I said, this is, I don't want to call it the glory days, but man, it sure was exciting. And so I think my final question for tonight, Mike, is...
Sure.
Ime Udoka, tell me about, we won't go through the whole series, I'll do that on Monday night, but tonight.
Well, because, you know, it's funny, he called, the thing I noticed the most today is when the Celtics got off to that bad start, he called the timeout at really good time.
Early, yeah.
Yeah, in other words, when they were chilling, he wasn't going to let them get behind by, let's say, 10 or 11 and then call a timeout. He was calling a timeout when they were down 5 and they were down 7, and he would make adjustments. And you could see he was a little bit frustrated. Matter of fact, I can recall when the Celtics took a 31-30 lead, there was a timeout by the Bucks. The Bucks went out and scored the next 6 or 7 points. And Udoka called an immediate timeout because he didn't want it to get out of hand, Rick. And I thought that was a sign of very good coaching. He wasn't going to let the Bucks get ahead by 12 or 13 and call the timeout too late, so to speak. And then he would call his timeout, and sometimes it would shuffle in a different player, or he would make some kind of defensive adjustment. And all I can tell you is that it worked. In other words, you know, he I thought he was brilliant in the way he orchestrated the game today and calling the timeouts and getting the players to play the correct defense and then calling out certain offensive plays. I mean, they really, I thought the players really bought into today. They've been buying in pretty much all along. But in such an important game today where one or two baskets could make a huge difference in the swing of a game, I thought Udoka, just the way he used his timeouts and made his adjustments, was also a terrifically big factor in the game.
He seems to have a real command of the game in terms of logistics, in terms of feel, and also in terms of who he's got on his team and how to get across to them. He seems to be a very experienced teacher.
Right, and for a rookie coach, you know, I think he finished fourth in the Coach of the Year voting, and I guess that's okay because you have Monty Williams of Phoenix. He won like 64 games, and then Eric Spoelstra had a great year with Miami and all that. But I think, you know, Udoka is obviously, hopefully, a rising star. He's had a very impressive first year, and, you know, let's face it, he got the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals here, and, you know, you could toss the ball up in the air right now. I wouldn't know who to. We could discuss this tomorrow night.
Yep, yep.
It's a toss, you know, it's possibly a toss-up again. They just beat the defending champs. That's a signature series for the team and for a rookie coach to beat the defending champs in a seven-game series.
All right, for this series, just focus on the Milwaukee series for me. This is it for me. Two things. The most valuable player for the Celtic, if you can do that, and I think it's very difficult with traditional Celtic basketball, their team, you know, and except for Bill Russell, maybe, or Larry Bird, it's hard to go with one guy. But is there an MVP in your mind for this series and underrated player of the series?
Okay. I think I can answer that one, in my opinion, obviously. Tatum has to be the MVP because today, if you took a Game 7, he had to keep himself under control with four fouls, and he still hit some big shots and finished with 23. However, I think he gained the MVP status in a Game 6 on the road by scoring 46 points.
Okay.
Which was one. Sam Jones scored 47 points in an elimination game, okay, one time, a Game 7, okay? And Tatum basically duplicated what Sam Jones was able to do 50 years ago, or whenever that game was. I haven't looked it up yet. But to score 46 on the road in, obviously, a night when they could have been eliminated, to me, he kind of won the MVP right then and there. As far as, what was your second part? Underrated player?
The most underrated player who really contributed.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, we could always say Marcus Smart because he does so many different things. But I'll have to say Grant Williams because not only was it today, with the 25, which I believe was a career high, and playing so great both ways in a seventh game. But he also had the 21-point game earlier in the series. Again, you know, when they're trying to establish they can play with the Bucks, he had a 21-point game and had a great night shooting from outside. So, you know, and he was consistent on the defensive end. So he took on that huge burden of trying to guard Giannis, who everyone says is the best player in the world, and it's possibly true, but as an undersized guy playing a position that Robert Williams would have been playing, but Robert Williams was hurt, Grant Williams, to me, was the most underrated player in the series.
Okay, and for those of us of a certain age, you mentioned, I think you mentioned Sam Jones, and
yep.
They're wearing number 24 on their shirts, sleeves, and
yep.
It's just such a tribute to those of us who remember back in those days to see this team play sort of like the old Celtics did.
Yeah, they did. They really did, and it's so great to see that today. And you know what? I wish Tommy Heinsohn could have seen this.
who would get the Tommy points tonight?
Well, you know, I guess we'd have to give it to Grant.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, you know, Peyton Pritchard, too, of course, he didn't have, like, big games throughout the series. But today, when the Celtics were, you know, struggling on offense, he gave him a couple of huge threes to give him a boost. And defensively, just it seems like a minor thing here, Rick, but one time he was guarding Bobby Portis, who was 6'10", and Pritchard was in a bad defense. You know, Portis was taking him down low, and he had nothing in front of the behind him except Pritchard, who was like barely 6 feet. And Portis used his elbow to clear out, and they called him for an offensive foul.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to everybody, all Portis had to do was go straight up and take
right.
a 6 foot jumper.
Yep.
Instead, Pritchard drew the offensive foul, and those are the plays that change the flow of the game and get the crowd going.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I think Van Gundy said on that exact play just exactly what you said.
Okay. Well, and I'm not repeating what Van Gundy said, obviously.
You didn't watch it. That's right.
He said it when he said it, when I said it.
Yep. You know? No, that's what I'm saying. Right. Exactly.
But Pritchett played you, just particularly in the second half. And I have to give Horford, you know, Rick, we can wrap this up with the way Horford played defense today. Like I said, he didn't care if he, you know, obviously he was going to take the open shot when he got it. And he only took like 7 shots, I believe. He went 2 for 7 or 3 for 7. But his defense was he was laser focused, you know, on Giannis. And he just wasn't going to let Giannis go crazy with 40 or 42 points. And obviously we mentioned Grant Williams on Giannis, but Horford was part of that defensive wall. And Giannis shot 10 for 26. 4 for 16 in the second half. So we have to give Horford his props as well.
All right, final question. When you're up there way up high in the garden, Mike,
yes.
You know, we can see, you've got the TVs up there too, but when you're at a game, you can watch different aspects of who's on the floor. You don't necessarily always watch the ball. So what was it like for you up there tonight in terms of just covering the game?
Well, I think what's fabulous about being up there is you see the plays develop before they happen.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can spot the mismatches. You're right. Unlike the TV cameras who, let's say, have their cameras on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
If Drew Holiday, for example, the point guard of Milwaukee, has the ball, you can see he's looking, who's cutting, who's making the cuts, who's screening. And then you can see that when Marcus Smart has the ball as well. You can see the plays develop and the possibilities of the outcome of the plays before they happen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the beauty of being at a game like that. You know, you could see the plays develop. And I said to Phil Stacey a few times today, Drew Holiday really understands how to play the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
He can see which guys are hot. He can see which guys are going to become open off a pick. He can see the mismatches. By the same token, Marcus Smart does the same thing for the Celtics. I can't say enough about Marcus Smart. He beat himself up after giving up Game 5. In other words, they made those 3 bad mistakes in the final 2 minutes of the game.
Yep.
And he beat himself up. He took the blame. He took the heat. He couldn't sleep for 2 nights. He went back to the practice facility after losing Game 5 and took his frustration out by taking shots at midnight. Okay? And then he came back with a phenomenal Game 6, scored 21. And, of course, today, like I pointed out, I thought he made the single most important play with 9/10 of a second left in the first half.
And I think that on Monday night when we talk, that we should take a look at Game 6 as well, because that was such a huge, huge game.
Oh, yeah, classic game, Rick, in many ways.
All right. Mike, this has been great. Get some rest tonight, brother. And we'll talk.
Oh, yes.
We'll talk on Monday.
We're just looking forward to this. It's amazing they're moving on to the finals. It's out of this world great for Celtics fans.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Mike, thank you. We'll talk on Monday.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for everything.
Good night, Mike. Take care. All right. Bye-bye. Okay, that's Mike Grenier, who is a sports historian and also a super basketball analyst. Who gives us his time here on MSO No Sport. With MSO No Sports, it's late. I'm Rick Moore, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you at North Shore Sports Night on Monday night at around 7 o'clock.